Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not gonna just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics' True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out, my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. A couple starts off from Florida on a long road trip, but instead of making it to their ultimate destination together, the boyfriend returns alone to his mother's home in his girlfriend's car
and says he has no clue where she is. This isn't the case, though, that you may be thinking of. Today, we're going to be discussing the 2020 disappearance of 36-year-old Kelly Brannon from Live Oak, Florida. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Kelly Brannon. I'm Conan Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. And so sorry about not having this episode last week, but that was somebody's fault who is not me.
It's not my fault that I have to work so much.
Okay. I'm just saying it's not my fault. And out of the two of us. But this week, we're going to bring you a more recent story. As I mentioned, out of Live Oak, Florida. So, you know, I've obviously alluded to the Gabby Petito case in the intro,
yeah,
and
I was making faces.
Very confused. I know, you're like, we already did this one.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, didn't we have an episode on this already?
Yeah. But yeah, so it's interesting. I have been somewhat aware of this case for a while, several months. So, like, before Gabby's case. But, like, again, just like so many other things I'm just generally aware of but don't know a whole lot about. One thing that has been happening since Gabby's case is that people have been looking at the coverage and interest in her case and wondering why all missing persons cases don't receive that level of attention. And it's, you know, really interesting because there are, you know, a couple of Twitter accounts and there's a Facebook group for Kelly. And one of the Twitter accounts tweeted something that was like, hey, you know who else went missing after a road trip with her boyfriend that started in Florida and involved domestic violence? Like, my friend Kelly, maybe people should look for her too. And I was like, oh, that's weird. And it turns out, yeah, the circumstances were very similar in the two cases.
Hmm.
So they had actually also... And I didn't see it at the time. I saw it late, which, you know, I felt bad about. But they had tagged us on Facebook because they're basically actively trying to get podcasts to cover Kelly's story.
Oh.
So anyway, so that's kind of what got me to look into this. And yeah, it's a very interesting case. So, you know, we're just going to talk about that today. You know, this issue of who gets coverage and who, you know, how the police respond to missing persons cases is a conversation that we've had on this podcast specifically. And it's a conversation that those of us in the true crime space in general have been having for a while now. But it is really nice to see it gain traction in the broader media landscape. I mean, even Gabby's family said that their wish is that everyone gets the attention that her case got.
Right.
Right. And they formed the Gabby Petito Foundation in order to aid in that effort. So, you know, it's something that we've been talking about, something that a lot of people, again, in this community have been talking about. So I'm just really happy that it's just more on the surface, basically.
It's also something that we've gotten negative reviews on.
Yeah,
which
I know.
Infuriates me, but
yeah, that's like, all right though.
You know, hey, maybe you should listen to, or like pay attention to what we actually do and what our podcast is about before you start saying stop talking about race.
Yeah, or like I listened to this to escape. That was my favorite one.
I listened to this to escape. What are you escaping from?
Like shit. Like what? Hellhole are you escaping from
that you're listening
like,
to a podcast about like, missing
oh,
persons
yes.
unsolved
is,
missing persons
cases.
This is how
I de-stress. Yeah. Let me like hear about these people's worst day. And I'm sure though, to be fair, some of you are thinking like, okay, like your talk is cool, but you're covering another case of a missing white woman because Kelly Brannon is white. And so, yes, that's true. But, you know, what has struck me is that even though there are such distinct parallels between her story and Gabby's, Kelly's has gotten only a fraction of the attention. So we're going to talk about that today and, you know, hopefully get more people aware of this case so that we can find some answers. Before we dive in, though, I want to thank those of you who have joined us over on our Patreon page. So thank you, Sin L, Kenzie D, Kim P, Haley A, Sarah M, and Anna. We really appreciate you. You are amazing.
Thank you so much.
And if you would like to join us, you can do so at patreon.com/attwgpod. But now let's get to Kelly's story. Kelly Brannon was born on May 2nd, 1984 in Charleston, New Hampshire. Kelly was an only child and her father passed away when she was five. It doesn't seem like Kelly had much family. Apparently at the time of her disappearance last year in 2020, the only family she really had left was her elderly mother who still lived back in New Hampshire. The term that is most used to describe Kelly is a free spirit. Even though she was close with her mother, she had a wanderlust that she absolutely indulged. She was a writer, an artist, and a musician. She was an activist. She was an organizer. Kelly is the type of person who cares deeply about people and animals and always makes an impression on those around her. While you may think that due to her constantly moving around, she would have trouble creating lasting relationships, the opposite actually seems to be true. Usually, in missing persons cases, we see the immediate family leading the charge to find their loved one. As Kelly's mother is basically her only family, it's really her friends who have taken up the charge. They have created Facebook groups, Twitter accounts, a YouTube channel, and they are constantly reaching out to reporters, podcasters, and anyone else they can think of in order to bring more attention to their missing friend's case. They are absolutely passionate and dedicated to bringing their friend justice. One of the things that they've been doing is trying to give the public a fuller picture of who Kelly is. She was 36 when she went missing, which, you know, was already a strike against her in terms of police response.
Right, because missing adults don't typically get a robust police response.
Right.
The initial thought is that they're an adult, they can go off on their own.
Yeah, it's
why,
not a
why
crime.
Why waste the resources looking for them?
Exactly. So strike one, right? And there was also like her kind of transient lifestyle and the fact that she wasn't like a mom or someone with a stable job who lived in the suburbs. There's this idea that if someone who goes to PTA meetings goes missing, it's a tragedy. But if it's someone who lives an unconventional lifestyle, then that just kind of happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. So Kelly's friends have tried to let people know that she was more than what she may have appeared to have been on her missing posters. Kelly received her BFA from the Massachusetts College of Art and Design in 2010 and followed that up with her MFA in creative writing from Goddard College in 2015. She was an activist who led the Occupy Wall Street March in Washington, D.C., she started a creative performance series in Brooklyn, New York, and when she heard someone was about to get evicted, she put on a show to raise money for their rent. And it worked. Kelly is the type of person, according to her friends, who has the ability to draw people in and make things happen. In 2019, Kelly began a relationship with Eddie Emerson. Eddie is 6 years Kelly's junior and was a small engine mechanic. The couple apparently fell hard for each other, but the relationship was tumultuous. They allegedly fought constantly and were continually breaking up and getting back together. Her friend Marvo, whom Kelly had met through the Gainesville club scene, told the WTAF podcast that Kelly briefly ended up in jail. According to the Gainesville Sun, Kelly was arrested in October of 2019 for illegally entering an impound lot and trying to drive her car off without paying the fee. Which,
all right.
It's like a hilarious reason to get arrested, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, you know, she's good for her. Like, gotta shoot your shot, I guess. But she was caught on surveillance video and was charged with burglary and fraud. So the fraud charge was quickly dropped, but I'm not sure what the resolution was to the burglary charge. But, you know, again, good for her for trying, I guess. In any case, Marvo was concerned about his friend, so he got her information and went and visited her in jail. While he was there, she told him that Eddie had also been to visit her, but that they had gotten into a fight. Marvo told her that if she needed a place to stay when she was released, that she was more than welcome to crash on his floor. According to him, this was like something he always let people do. You know, like bands were coming into town and, you know, things like that. They would just crash at his place. So Kelly took him up on his offer and ended up staying with him for a time. Kelly and Eddie worked out their differences, but for some reason, Eddie's landlord apparently didn't want Kelly staying there. And I don't know what that's about. Like, so I'm just gathering all this from this interview that Marvo gave on this podcast. So I don't know what the backstory is there, if what was happening, but it led to her kind of bouncing back and forth between Eddie's place and Marvo's. Marvo characterized it as basically her coming back whenever she and Eddie would get into a fight, which was pretty often. Things between Kelly and Eddie came to a head the day after Christmas of 2019. The couple got into a fight and Eddie physically assaulted Kelly. There are photos of her with a black eye and Eddie was arrested for the incident. Though this was apparently the only assault that resulted in an arrest, according to Marvo, this was far from the first time things got physical between them. He said that he had seen marks on Kelly multiple times before, including like a mark on her arm that was very visibly a handprint.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But like we see with many abuse victims, she kept on explaining away the behavior. When Eddie was arrested, Marvo says that she tried to get the police not to press charges, much like we saw in Gabby Petito's body cam, right? You know, where they were both saying like, oh, no, don't arrest her, don't arrest him, you know, whatever. Like it is. It's very typical in these situations.
Yeah. And when I say typical, I don't mean typical in a sarcastic, negative way towards the victim. It's typical for the situation.
Right. It is. Now, Kelly had a very progressive and diverse group of friends, and they very clearly saw how toxic this relationship was and tried to get her help and tried to, you know, convince her to leave it. But Kelly didn't want to leave. Marvo says that their group started to ostracize Eddie, you know, because he was a piece of shit who hit his girlfriend.
Right.
But that Kelly begged them to forgive Eddie and kind of like let him back in. So Marvo said that at least he, and it sounds like others, relented and just kind of like went along with everything. In the summer of 2020, Kelly was ready to move on from Gainesville and start a new chapter of her life and a new adventure. And she wanted to do it with Eddie. Around this time, Kelly actually had found out that she had been receiving benefits for a PTSD diagnosis that she had. But she was aware that she was receiving these benefits. So they were kind of like piling up. It's like, it's kind of a complicated story.
Where were they piling up? And
so it's like kind of a complicated story. They were like, she had these checks, I guess, that were going to an old address or something like that. But long story short, she ended up with like $9,000 that somebody kind of helped her gather up and put on a, like a prepaid credit card or something like that. So she had this like card that had all of this money on it that was from these government benefits, right? So she had like between $6,000 and $9,000 from what people have kind of been able to piece together. Detroit, Michigan has been an economically devastated city for a while now, but it's on its way up. However, at the time, and even today, there were opportunities to buy homes in poor repair for like basically free. Friends say that she knew someone who could connect her with a $2,000 house.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So her plan was to move up there with Eddie, buy that house and the two lots next to it, fix it up, and basically just like raise chickens and live their lives and just kind of do what they had been doing, you know, just in Detroit.
But actually owning their house outright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I took a quick look on Zillow, and there is currently, as of this writing, a home for sale for $5,000. Granted, like, it's basically a teardown, but there are plenty others for, like, around $35,000 that still need work, but actually don't look too terrible inside. So while she wouldn't have been able to buy something like that with cash, with the amount of money she did have, she could have theoretically financed something like that. So I don't know exactly what the plan was, but, you know, when I was first reading through this and they're like, she was going to buy a house for $2,000. I was like, that seems not real. But there are a few ways in which that could have been a thing. So that was the plan. So on July 9th, 2020, Kelly and Eddie set off from Gainesville, Florida to Detroit, Michigan. Now, as it happens, you can basically make that entire drive just staying on I-75.
Really?
Yeah. I had no idea. I have never even heard of I-75. Yeah. Like, because when we go down to Florida, we go on 95. Right. But, you know, whatever. So I-75 will basically get you from Gainesville to Detroit. So that was their thing. They're going to stay on this whole, this highway the whole time.
Also, I must not understand geography at all, because in my mind, like, Florida's here and Michigan is somewhere further west.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously north, but.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Listen, I didn't Google map it. I'm just taking their word for it. But they loaded up Eddie's 1982 Toyota pickup truck and Kelly's 1999 Toyota Camry with all of their belongings, their guitars, their dogs, and their chickens, and began their road trip.
My first car was a 97 Toyota Camry, so I know those last a long time.
Exactly. So yeah, her car was fine. Spoiler alert, none of these problems center around Kelly's car. That 99 Camry, like, went the distance. Totally cool. So they wanted to save money for their house and like everything that they were planning, because obviously they weren't buying a $2,000 move-in ready house. Like, they're going to have to spend a lot of money once they got there. So they were trying to make the trip on a shoestring budget. They had not gotten bougie like I have, where I realized a few years ago on a drive to Florida that I can no longer make that trip without stopping in a Marriott, specifically a Marriott along the way. Like, I can no longer do a Motel 6 or even a Days Inn at this point.
Well, also, you know, there's five of us. So
I'm talking about even when I'm just going down with like one or two of the kids, you know, and like a one room, whatever would suffice. I'm soft. I'm weak. I can't do it anymore. But, you know, they hadn't gotten to that point. So they set off and they only made it about 77 miles. So like an hour.
Yeah.
Basically. Before Eddie's transmission blew. Apparently, this happened kind of after hours, so there weren't any nearby auto shops open. So the couple camped on the side of the road, basically, and then called for a tow truck in the morning. The tow truck took them to Reese's Auto Repair in Live Oak, Florida. The shop assessed the truck, and the couple set off in search of a used transmission. On the afternoon of the 10th, they went to Lake City, Florida to try to find the part, and they ended up staying there that night at the Cypress Inn. They returned to Live Oak the following day. It was taking time to find the right part and get everything together, so they ended up buying a tent from the thrift store and they camped out in Live Oak. With the right part still not materializing, they tried to make the best of the situation. They traveled to St. Augustine, Florida, which is where we spent my birthday a few years ago.
Beautiful city.
Yeah, it's a great city. So, you know, they just like, they're like, okay, well, we're in the area. We obviously have time to kill, so let's go visit. And they ended up camping out in a state park there. On July 13th, Eddie finally finds a transmission in Lakeland, Florida. So they pick it up and take it to Reese's Auto Repair so they can begin work on the truck the next morning. Now, during this time, the couple has made friends. So like I said, Kelly is the type of person who like, she just makes an impression where she goes. So even though they had only been in this area for a few days, like they were getting to know people. And they had made friends with the man who owns Armando's Mexican restaurant in Live Oak, which is like near the auto repair shop. So it's like the first day they were in town, they went to eat lunch there,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like one of those situations. So early on in this whole multi-day transmission saga, this guy who owns it hears the whole story and how they're basically stranded with like their dog and chickens. And he happens to own a property kind of on the outskirts of town that has chicken coops. So
random.
I know, right? So he offers to take the chickens while they're there, like waiting for this whole transmission thing, waiting for the truck to be fixed. So at least they haven't been like dealing with chickens in a dog kennel throughout this whole thing, because that's how they were transporting them. So they just like put their chickens in a dog kennel.
Like
and
a crate?
It. Yeah, like, yeah, dog crate.
Oh, wow.
Right, so like not ideal.
No, definitely not.
Right? So luckily, yeah, they met this guy and he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, your chickens can like chill at my house until you get this fixed. So the morning of the 14th, it looks like they're finally going to be able to get back on the road because, again, it was the 13th where he found the transmission, dropped it off, and the auto body shop was supposed to begin work on the 14th. And so they're like, okay, we got it. They're going to do it. We're going to get out of here. This is cool. So Kelly starts preparing. So she goes and gets the chickens back and she's ready to go. But after she does that, they found out that it's the wrong transmission.
Didn't you say he was a mechanic?
Small engine mechanic. So, I mean, listen, I know nothing, so I don't know how well that translates. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what that means, a small engine mechanic, but I...
Like, maybe he fixes, like, lawnmowers?
Oh, yeah, okay, all right.
I don't know. But, yeah, so in any case, the transmission that he got did not work. So, as you can imagine, stress levels are getting pretty high at this point.
Yeah.
They left on this road trip 5 days ago, and they made it 77 miles.
Yeah.
Right? Like, can you imagine?
I'm just surprised they didn't, like, turn around and go back home.
Yeah, at that point, right?
Until and just kind of regroup. Was, yeah, until the truck was finished.
Yeah. I think it's just one of those things where, like, you're like, okay, it's going to be ready. It's going to be ready. It's going to be ready. And yeah. It just kind of keeps on getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back like imperceptible ways until all of a sudden it's 5 days later.
Yeah.
But by this point, they've spent money on hotels, on tow trucks, and they're literally getting nowhere. Eddie ends up getting a refund for their transmission that he bought, but now they're back to square one trying to find this part. So they start bickering throughout the day. Eddie persuades Kelly to stay one more night so that they can get this sorted out. They end up getting a room at the Sunshine Motel in Live Oak. This is like a whole thing, though, because Kelly had already gotten the chickens back.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So not only are they dealing with a dog at a hotel, but they've got multiple chickens in a dog crate.
Yeah. I can't imagine the manager of the hotel or motel, like,
yeah,
liking that too much.
No, not at all. And so the employees at the motel are like, yeah, dude, like you got to figure out something else because you cannot bring this like dog crate full of chickens into our room.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, trying to figure out what to do. Kelly wants to bring them into the room, but Eddie's like, there's no way that's going to work.
Like, just bring them into the room and, like, let them out of the crate?
I guess.
Okay.
But either way, letting them out of the crate or leaving them in the crate, it doesn't seem like it's going to end very well.
No, definitely not.
So Eddie's like, no, absolutely not. So that starts an argument. Now, in the meantime, so like when they're arguing over all of this, they have the chickens on like the lawn by the motel. And three of them like run away.
Okay.
So Eddie is done. He is like, I don't want to catch these chickens. And he tries to convince Kelly to just let them like roam free during the night and they'll just deal with it in the morning. But Kelly is a huge animal person, so that absolutely does not work for her. And this whole time, I can just imagine my sister and her husband having this exact same fight.
Yeah.
So personality-wise, Kelly very much reminds me of my older sister, Andrea.
Yeah.
But this specific chicken fight very much reminds me of my younger sister and Patreon member slash listener of the show, Kaylee, and her husband, Joel, because this very much seems like a fight that they would be having. And Joel's like, oh, chickens are gone. They're going to roam free. They're going to have a great life.
Bye, chickens.
Bye. And then Kaylee absolutely freaking out on him.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I identified like a lot with this this part of the story. But so yeah, so it's like it's bad, right? And they also then start arguing about money. So it sounds like because Kelly had this kind of chunk of money on this card that she's been paying for a lot of the expenses at this point. And during their fight, she says something to the effect of, your money is your money, but my money is our money. Kelly and Eddie keep arguing throughout the evening and into the night. Kelly leaves the room and ends up basically going out into the parking lot of the hotel. They continue the argument over text and phone calls. At some point, Kelly gets a bottle of wine and starts drinking. Eddie said in an interview that she also, at some point, got a bottle of rum. As she starts drinking, the fight gets worse. As Eddie says, Kelly is a writer, so she's very creative with her insults. And even her friend Marvo says that when Kelly drinks, like, if she's angry, it can get pretty intense. So she's saying a bunch of mean things to Eddie, and he admits that he was saying a bunch of mean things to her as well. At one point, late at night, another hotel guest who they seem to have interacted with before, because again, like these are just the type of people who like go and make friends with everybody they come across. So this guy, JR, tells Eddie that he should go check on Kelly. According to Eddie, Kelly is outside, like in the parking lot, drunk and crying and threatening to leave. Because remember, Eddie's truck is in the shop, but Kelly's Camry is like all well and good.
Yeah.
So she could theoretically leave at any time.
Right.
But according to Eddie, like she's drunk at this point. So he takes her keys from her to keep her from driving. He said, quote, she was crying. She was miserable. She was drunk. I didn't comfort her. I just took her keys off her waist and I said, you can't drive now. All right. End quote. So Eddie goes back up to the room and does that like thing that guys love to do in fights and just decides to just remove himself from the entire thing. And he decides he's just going to go to sleep. But since it's a motel, the door obviously locks automatically behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And Kelly doesn't have a room key at this point, so he essentially locks her out of the room. Surveillance footage shows Kelly walking around the hotel parking lot at around 10:30 p.m. She has her purse on her, but that's about like all you can see. So if you look at the footage, she's just kind of walking through the parking lot and she has like a tiny crossbody bag. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have a bottle. She doesn't seem agitated. She's just like walking. According to Eddie, she keeps on calling him and he just hangs up on her during this period. At 12:59 a.m. on July 15th, Kelly leaves a voicemail on Eddie's phone. So we're going to listen to it now.
Oh, great. You're sleeping. I'm so glad I got that message from you before telling me how you're sorry and you love me and how you want me so much and all that bullshit just to get my car. Well, anyways, I've rented my own room at the Sunshine Inn and I've reported my car stolen and told them who stole it. So expect cops knocked at your door and I will be right next door at my own motel room because I'm not allowed to stay with you because I want to see you pay. Oh, you get the benefit because you only look out for you. It's your money. It's just for you. But my money is for both of us, essentially, which is bullshit. And I should obviously definitely do the Detroit thing on my own or go to Iceland. Like, you are not a partner. You're not a partner. You turn on me a second. You turn on me out of nowhere. And I deserve way better. I did nothing to be called a fucking stupid idiot. And I did nothing to be called a cunt. So, you know, I'm sick of your abuse. So go find... Oh, I'm going to get in a car right now. All right, bye.
Okay, so you just listened to the voicemail for the first time.
Yeah. So the part right at the end, I'm still hung up on. So yeah. She said that she's...
So is everybody else.
Clearly. So she said she's getting her own room.
Yep.
She reported her car stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was the one that stole it.
Mm-hmm.
But then she says she's getting in a car now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I hear somebody else in the background.
I don't think it's somebody else. I think that's her. So, okay. So let's take this like piece by piece because there's a lot there. Yes. In the voicemail, Kelly does say that she's renting her own room at the same motel.
Mm-hmm.
And that she reported her car stolen to the police. Now, her car was not stolen. Her car was there. But Eddie did take her keys, so she did not have access to her car. However, it was later found out that she never rented another room at the motel and she never reported her car stolen.
Okay.
So those are two things that she was just telling him on the voicemail, but they did not happen. What you hear at the very end is, okay, I'm getting in a car now, bye. And then a click, a beep, and then a sound, which to me actually sounds like her again.
Like talking to somebody else?
Saying something, but like a click, a beep, and then talking. Like that's not how voicemail works on cell phones.
Yeah.
So there's actually a lot of speculation as to, is this voicemail actually real or has it been altered in some way?
Hmm.
So we'll get to that. But according to police, there are witnesses from the hotel who claim that they saw Kelly walking around this time toward downtown Live Oak with her guitar slung on her back. Around this time, meaning, so this message was left at around 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
on July 15th. But like, there's a lot that strikes me as wrong about this because it's around 1 a.m., which is several hours after the last footage of her at the hotel. If she had been at the hotel the entire time, like, why wasn't she picked up on video closer to the time of this call?
Right.
Also, she had her purse with her in the CCTV footage, but when she allegedly decided to leave, she took her guitar but left her purse behind along with all of her money, including that card that had like $9,000 on it and her driver's license.
You say that she left her purse behind. Was her purse recovered?
Yeah.
After where? Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. I think it was recovered like in or around her car.
So the car was unlocked.
Yeah, I think the car was unlocked, okay, but she didn't have the keys.
Right, but she had access to.
Right. Okay. So I think maybe the guitar was also in the car. But like that also doesn't sound right because like they had several guitars and they were worried about them. So like they wouldn't leave them in the car. So I don't like that actually, because we'll get more into the guitars in a little bit. But like the whole guitar thing is very weird and confusing as well. But you can see her with a bag in the CCTV footage. So I don't know for a fact that her wallet was in that bag.
Mm-hmm.
But she's carrying a purse in the CCTV footage.
Right.
So I would assume that her like wallet and ID and everything would be in there. But I don't know that for a fact. All of that was recovered later. In her car. The two things that were missing were Kelly and Kelly's guitar. According to Eddie, he woke up around 8:45 the next morning, which is the 15th, and saw that, you know, Kelly was gone. He looked for her around the motel and then checked out of the motel immediately, which also strikes me as odd because, right. Like, you know, I don't know what time Sunshine Inn's checkout is, but I would imagine it's 11 or 12 or whatever. And, you know, they'd probably be pretty okay with maybe a late checkout, I would feel like. But he checked out immediately at like 9 a.m. or 9:30, you know, right about then.
Well, also, why would he check out? One would assume that he heard the voicemail at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, you wake up, I would assume you see that, yeah. A voicemail on your cell phone, you listen right. to it, right?
Or even if he didn't, he wakes up, he looks for Kelly, doesn't find her. Then at that point, at least, you're definitely listening to your voicemails, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So either way, I have to believe whether he did it as soon as he woke up or later after he was looking for Kelly, I have to believe he would have listened to the voicemail before he like
decided to leave her.
Right. He checks out early in the morning, like 9:30, something like that, and he goes and looks around town for her. No one apparently had seen her though, you know, because like again, they kind of know some people in sure. Live Oak at this point. So he asks around, nobody's seen her. He continues to search and he just drives around. Because remember, he had taken Kelly's keys,
right.
So he has her car. So he's driving around in her car at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So he found no sign of her. And he stayed in the area for the next several days. Like, I think it was about 4 days. And he's looking for her and, you know, asking around and other people are looking for her. But after about 4 days, when he doesn't find her, he takes her car and drives to his mother's house in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So while you may have Brian Laundrie type alarms going off in your head right now, the two situations aren't identical. While we all know that Brian returned home to his parents, didn't report Gabby missing, lawyered up, and then ran, Eddie didn't do that. He did report Kelly missing, which, of course, the police weren't super interested in. He looked for her himself, and he has continued to make the rounds over the past year, doing interviews and talking about how he wants to find Kelly. Like, he has stayed in the public eye for the most part.
Okay.
But some of Kelly's friends aren't necessarily buying the innocent boyfriend act. First of all, he often tries to downplay his domestic violence arrest as a one-time mistake, but his violence toward Kelly was allegedly ongoing, and her friends worried that they were in an incredibly toxic relationship. There's also some suspicion, which I kind of mentioned earlier, that the voicemail that came in at 12:59 a.m. was doctored, that perhaps the end, where she says that she's getting into a car, was spliced in from another recording. And now there's a whole audio analysis of this on YouTube, which I'll link in the blog. And I don't want to get into it too much because, like, I listened to it, but, like, I honestly can't say what I think about it because I just don't understand enough about audio to be convinced either way.
Right.
But Kelly's phone hasn't been recovered, and there are also allegations that some of her location data has been messed with as well. So, like, not long after she went missing, the location, and I'm not talking about cell phone tower pings. Sure. I'm just talking about, like, location data in her accounts showed her in downtown Live Oak, Florida, which would be consistent with these, like, witness accounts of her walking toward downtown at 1 a.m. But apparently it looks like that was, like, added manually after the fact.
How can you do that?
That's the whole thing. I don't know. But again, there are YouTube videos that go into it. We'll link to them so you guys can kind of look at it, make your own determinations. That part of it is a little fuzzy for me. Unlike the Gabby Petito case, where her boyfriend was pretty much the only person she was with, this case does have some other people on the sidelines. Even though they were only in Live Oak for a few days, Kelly and Eddie met a lot of people. There was the owner of Armando's who helped them with their chickens, and there were some fellow hotel guests who were basically local criminals. One of them, this guy JR, who I mentioned earlier, allegedly ended up stealing Eddie's guitars and pawning them. So from what I've been able to gather, because I've, like, talked with some of Kelly's friends during this, is that I guess, like, while Eddie was in Live Oak looking for Kelly, he left his guitars with JR, and JR just ended up taking them and pawning them.
Nice guy.
Yeah. So at some point after Eddie went to Massachusetts, he came back to Live Oak and then was able to go to the pawn shop and somehow get his guitars back for $100,
okay,
which seems very low to me. But I don't know. So police are aware of JR and some other folks who Eddie and Kelly had been hanging around, but say that there's nothing specific that would point to any of them.
So you said that there was CCTV footage of her wandering around the parking lot.
Yeah.
Was her car in any of the CCTV shots?
I don't know specifically. It's possible because there were cars in the shots. I don't know if her car specifically was in those, though.
And I'm wondering if there was any footage of their room, the door to their room or whatever.
What I'm getting at is
I wonder, you know, if there was any way to corroborate him saying that he went to his room and stayed there the whole night.
Right. The only footage that has been released is of the parking lot, of Kelly walking back and forth, and it's about 10:30. There has been no footage released of...
Yeah, well, I'm sure the police have reviewed it.
Yeah, of her, like, earlier or later. Now, every place that I've seen this footage touts it as the last footage of Kelly, which, again, just seems so weird to me if she was making this call at 12:59. Now, one of the things that these, like, videos get into is the fact that, you know, police obviously pulled cell records and they don't have Kelly's phone, but they pulled the records. They pulled Eddie's records. And there's no incoming call at 12:59 a.m.
Oh, really?
No. So it could be because his phone was off at the time.
And it went straight to voicemail, right?
There's no corroboration in the cell phone records that this voicemail actually happened in its state at 12:59 a.m.
Hmm. So where did they get this voicemail then?
So they got it from his phone. I mean, like, he turned it over. He has been cooperating with the investigation this entire time. The police are, of course, considering Eddie to be a person of interest, but as of right now, even though she's been missing for over a year, we don't have any evidence that a crime has even occurred.
Right.
So there's not really much that they can do without evidence at this point. What they don't think happened is that some random person came off the highway and kidnapped Kelly. Due to the fact that she left her money and ID behind and that it has been so long since she's been in contact with anyone, they also don't think that she just took off out of her own volition. Police do believe that foul play is involved, and the general theory is that Kelly did willingly go with someone, either someone she knew or someone she was familiar with, and then something bad happened. They also believe that someone or several people who are in Live Oak know exactly what happened to Kelly Brannon, and we just need them to come forward.
There's also the whole thought of, you know, if he was abusive or has a history of abuse, right, how much can you believe of what he's saying? You know, he probably has a history of manipulation.
Right.
So we see this not only in like Brian Laundrie's case, but also in Chris Watts. They're egomaniacs and they think that they can kind of outsmart the cops and lie their way through things like this.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes you question everything that he is saying.
Right. It does. And the difference is that those bodies were discovered relatively quickly.
Right.
And you could say because there was a greater police response, there's a greater media response in both of those cases. But, you know, so Kelly's friends, like I said, have been tireless. They've hired private investigators.
Yeah.
They've done searches. Like, there have been a lot of searches, both done by the police and privately, and nobody has been able to find any trace of her.
It's probably safe to assume that the cops impounded and inventoried the car. And
well, so I don't think they actually did, no.
From what I understand, there could be evidence in there if he took her in the car, there could be evidence in there.
So I am not sure if the police searched it at all. I do know like that they did search the truck because the truck, you know, was in the repair shop, right? But in terms of the car, he drove it back to Massachusetts like 4 days after her disappearance. 4 days after her disappearance, the police were not super interested.
Right.
He drove it to Massachusetts. It eventually ended up back up with Kelly's mom. He ended up returning it to her along with Kelly's purse and, you know, like all of her belongings. It ended up going back to Kelly's mom. And from what her friends told me, the car they think ended up being sold at like auction.
We don't know if the police ever looked into the car.
Mm-mm.
I mean, that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
If he did something and used that to dispose of her body, the evidence is gone. You said that he stuck around looking for her, but why drive up to Massachusetts? I don't understand that. So you're looking for your missing girlfriend, and then you're just like, well, didn't find her. Guess I'm going to drive to my mom's house, basically across the country.
Well, on its face, I think the idea is, you know, I don't have a place to live in Gainesville anymore because I left. Obviously, the place I was going to live in Detroit isn't going to work out because Kelly was going to buy it.
Sure.
So where else do I go?
But why go up there before reporting her missing to the cops?
No, I don't think he went there before he reported her missing. Okay. I do think he reported her missing before he left Live Oak. I'm just saying that the investigation like wasn't very intense.
Okay.
At that point.
So it didn't kick off. All right.
Yeah. He did report her missing.
I guess I just don't understand it. I just don't understand leaving.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the idea is that he tried to find her. He couldn't find her. He reported her missing. And then at that point, like he had no connection to Live Oak. So he didn't know, like he didn't think there was anything else for him to do there, I guess.
I guess.
Kelly's friends run a multitude of social media accounts and are absolutely dedicated to finding their missing friend. They have gotten private investigators involved and have organized their own searches. They will not stop fighting for Kelly. So if there's anyone out there who has information about Kelly Brannon and what happened that night, please, please come forward. Kelly Brannon has been missing since July 15th, 2020. She is 5'6" and approximately 130 pounds. She has black hair with gray streaks and blue-green eyes. She was 35 years old when she went missing. She would be 36 today. If you have any information about what happened to Kelly, please contact the Live Oak Police Department at 386-362-7463. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook, and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.